Thank you, Rabbi Gross. And it really is a tremendous pleasure on two levels. Indeed, on a personal level, I mentioned we have a wonderful Parsha program that takes place in the school every Friday. And we have the opportunity to hear Rabbanim, community leaders from across the community. And we had Rabbi Gross just yesterday. And yes, it's, you know, if dog year is 1 for 7, I feel like it was about a week ago, give or take. But that's right on a Rabbi's Shabbos, I guess. So, but the truth is, thank God we go back many years, even decades, and to be reunited. United here in this wonderful community has really been one of the great pleasures for me and my family. My parents actually in Teaneck live right around the corner. I grew up essentially from the Rebbetzin's home, so from her parents' home and her home growing up. So it's a great zechus on a personal level and on a communal level. And looking at the wonderful community that we're so blessed to share, the opportunity that we have on behalf of the school and the Beit Midrash to bring in such esteemed scholars and to share them in partnership with the entire community really is an exquisite honor and pleasure, and speaks so much to what is so beautiful and endearing about our community is that sense that there's someone coming in, and then really all opportunity, we can all come together to learn from those individuals. Rabbi Horowitz has already been introduced. I certainly don't have to speak to his credentials, but I've had a wonderful experience over Shabbos, and I actually have to step out of another commitment this evening, so I'm going to have to kind of exit stage left or stage right, whatever it might be, but... I'm right, swing to the right. But I just want to say on a personal level, Horowitz, it was a really great pleasure to get to know each other. And we're going to get together, God willing, again soon. And I'm going to have many such opportunities. So thank you everyone very much, and enjoy Rabbi Horowitz.
Thank you very much. Shabbat Tov, everyone. I had the most amazing Shabbat down the road, and I had a great time looking at the Kohelet school. It was so beautiful. I'm a big believer in culture, and you know that schools have a personality, just like people do. And I walked into the school. The very first thing I saw three kids carrying a couch up the steps. And I said, wow, they get the kids to help here. This is really beautiful. Anyway, these guys, they weren't asked by anybody to do it. They just plopped it down on the landing, and they were sitting down. It was just so beautiful. I said, you know, these kids feel at home. And it was just amazing. I'm learning more about the school. And I really had a great time in the community. It was really, really beautiful. I'd like to start by sharing with you an experience that I had. A lot of us, you know, talking about relationships, parenting, grandparenting. I'm going to stop in a few minutes and ask you what you really came to hear about. But, you know, I always had these dreams We just started empty nesting 6 weeks ago, my wife and I. So, yes, kids are all out of the house. 27 years of PTA, of parent conferences, and 27 years later, Baruch Hashem. And I always had, I put on my Facebook page that empty nesting is like honeymooning. It's like a honeymoon, basically. The two of you get to spend time together. The only difference is you don't get suppers. It's like, you know, instead of saying that when you met, when you're honeymooning, oh, you love, can't wait to prepare stuff, as opposed to, I've made supper for 35 years. Nobody to cook for anymore. Anyway, so, you know, we had these dreams that our five children are going to all live in Muncie on this little cul-de-sac, you know. And God has a sense of humor, so we got one in L.A. and one in Baltimore, Kanahara, and one in Lakewood, one in Brooklyn. Our baby just moved to Brooklyn, and one moved to Muncie. And, you know, it struck me, we have Kanahara 8 grandchildren, and it struck me that a while ago, once we saw that the children, Baruch Hashem, you know, it's their life, their choice, that I'm going to have to really work on maintaining a relationship with the grandkids, or I'm just going to be Zaidi Munzi, you know? One of the most powerful experiences in my life in terms of raising our own children. Our next door neighbor was in the cheese business. We moved to Muncie 29 years ago. And our next door neighbor had a plant in Green Bay, Wisconsin, which is not that close to Muncie, okay? And we moved on a Thursday. Thank God the mother-in-law was watching the kids. We had some time off to settle in. And my wife, Baruch Hashem, is very organized, something I've never been accused of. She made a beautiful list of everybody who brought stuff over to the house, you know, while we were settling in. And Friday night, after we ate quickly, we went around to the neighbors. So we walked into this guy's house, and the mother was sitting at the table with three boys. And we said, "Hi, Yanki, how are you?" "Oh, they're right, they're here." "Thank you very much." She sent the, I looked at the lips, thank you for sending, you know, the crib sheet. So I said, "Hi, where's your husband?" So she said, "He's in the study." So, you know, I'm an impulsive guy. I said, "Where's the study?" I started to walk over. All four of them immediately said, "Hup! Can't go." So it turned out that this guy, his life was, that's where his parnassa was. His parnassa was very far from home. And all the years they lived there, till when the last kid went to college, they moved to Chicago, so it was a 2-hour drive for him to his plant in Green Bay. But maybe it's more than 2 hours of a short little flight. It certainly was closer than New York. There was a limo waiting for him, you know, an airport cab waiting for him at 4:30 in the morning, Monday morning, and he either got back midnight Thursday or, like, you know, Friday afternoon. That was his life. And this guy decided that he wanted to really get to know his kids. And being away all week, it would be a tough thing for him to do. So what he did was, on a rotating basis, he secluded himself in his study right after the meal with each of his four children on a rotating basis for 3, 4, 5 hours. They would close the door, and it was so funny, like the culture of the home, like they all said, "Can't disturb Dad. He's with whatever. He's with Nappy." And it made such an impression on me as a young parent. I remember hitting the door, like on the way out. I hit the door. You know, walking out, and I told my wife. I said, "My God, do I spend 4 hours with each of my kids over the course of a month? I mean, real quality time, not just a hello goodbye." And you know, it really changed. It really, you know, there are very few experiences that really changed. It really moved me. I said, "This guy's got this. This is his life. You know, it is what it is. You need parnassa. It's also important." And he decided to just make it work. So, with that in mind, that would be a backdrop to our discussion about relationships. How do you build relationships? How do you maintain relationships with your children if your kids are home? How many of you have children at home still? Okay. How many of you have teenagers at home? Okay. So we'll talk about that, about children, relationships, and how do you do grandparenting when you're not, they're all not living here in the cul-de-sac with you, right? What's the difference between a dead end and a cul-de-sac? $50,000 on the house, you know, just the, right? So I'd like to really talk about it, and with the elephant in the room, which is technology, and we're essentially communicating with children that are totally different than us in the way they think, the way they interact with each other, the way they interact with technology, and so technology could be an opportunity, you know, to FaceTime with the kids or to be able to really communicate with them. It's also an extraordinary barrier because let's be honest. We don't really understand this generation. You know, I think there's always somebody asked about, it's really cute. What are they called? Coffee and whatever it was, you know, they weren't.
I was there.
Coffee and something or other. Before the opening, they had a 45-minute session. Folks brought coffee into the room and we were just chilling and talking. And you know, somebody asked about differences between, you know, the parents and the kids today with technology. I said, I really believe this. I think there's a generation gap every 3 years now. It's hysterical because I see like the teenagers that were in my, that we raised in Yeshiva. I ran a boys' elementary school for 17 years. And like the Talmidim that come back from Eretz Yisrael, or the Rebbe, what's with these kids today? I promise you. Because like, it's just a totally different experience. So if you're saying things like, nobody talks anymore, texting, schmexting, you're basically hanging up a big sign, I don't get it. You know, you're hanging up a big sign that I just don't understand your life. So let's talk about it. Before I start, I'd like to really tell me, what you have to hear about? What's on your mind when you saw the topic about relationships, children and grandchildren? What's on your mind? Or what would you like to ask? Or what would you like to think about? I have some thoughts I prepared to talk, but I'd like to hear what's on your minds. Go ahead. Yes?
As a grandparent who has children all over the world, how do I, they're teenagers. When they were babies, it's very easy to be a good grandma. When you laugh, you read the books, and you're happy, and they're happy enough. As teenagers, you don't even know what to ask them anymore. What exactly am I supposed to say?
That's fantastic. That's very candid. I commend you. That's a good question. Did everybody hear? Okay. Go ahead, folks. That was a great... We could do an hour just on this. All right. Go ahead. How do you communicate with teenagers when, like you said, it's a different language, right? Good. So I have a thought that I'd like to share on that, but let's go. Anybody else? Come on, folks. What do you come to hear about? What's on your mind? What's on your mind about today's generation? I you know, my kids are out of the house, but I have to live in this... I have to live in the kids' world. So talk to me, folks. Anybody else? Yes?
We have 5 grandchildren, 11 down to 3. Mm-hmm. And we do not show favoritism. And so I'd like for you to discuss, when they're all together, and also...
Discuss how not to show favorites. That's a very bracing also. Another honest question. Go ahead. Anything else on that or just that's it?
Also, when they're all together, like now our oldest is just turned 11. And so he's not coming over tomorrow.
All of them?
Yeah, they're all, yes.
They live around here or they're
just, yeah.
Midwinter break or they're just here? Okay, go ahead.
So... I have games and board games.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference to keep the attention of the younger ones versus the older ones. And how to divide it up.
You know, one of the things I always say about Shabbos tables, people are always, concerned or thinking about what your Shabbos table should be like. So I always encourage parents not to make them too long, and if you make them long enough, let the kids, if you want to have a very long Shabbat meal, let the kids leave and let them sit on the couch, and as long as it's supposed to be a positive experience, I always say you have kids that are ranging in age. Let's say, you have a couple of teenagers and a couple of younger ones, and imagine if this was, you ask the teacher to create a lesson for all of those. Imagine you pull the kid. Just think about it. Imagine you took the classroom, you pull a Yankee kid. Okay, take an 11th grader, a 9th grader, a 4th grader, and 2 preschoolers, and put them in a room and say, okay, go, entertain them. Right? That's really what it is, right? You know, you're sitting here thinking, and the kids are mumbling. If you have these, the first grader's got his parasha, here's her parasha sheet, powder in pajamas in the middle of the night, and the teenager's going, oh my God. So it's one of the most common things that people complain about it, ask about it. What are you doing? What am I supposed to do? This is a great one. Rabbi Horowitz, what should I do? I have a teenage boy, and he sits in the bathroom for 45 minutes every Shabbos meal, and we can't get him out. Well, what am I supposed to do? So I said, do you let him read a book on the couch? In the middle of the Shabbos meal? He's in yeshiva 75 hours a week. What the heck do you want from the poor kid? He comes home, he wants to relax. So the only place where he can be left alone is in the bathroom. but the Shabbos tables is that's just a microcosm of what you're saying, trying to get everybody to go ahead. You had your hand up? Did you want to say something?
Well, also, to get back to more basics, just to maintain relationships with the grandchildren.
Right.
As they're, from 3 to 6. And not to have the focus when we visit them to be, oh, would you bring the presents?
What do you mean, the kids, you don't want them talking about the presents?
You know, I just feel like, is that an expectation? Have you...
Okay.
And also, in terms of your own children, have them as well the contact...
With the kids?
Relationship. No, just among themselves.
Oh, your siblings. You mean the siblings should be in touch with each other. Okay. Anybody else? I'll get going. Yes, sir.
Is living next door to or in proximity to your children and the grandchildren the guy named that imagine it? Or is it, does it come with its own set of pitfalls, things you have to really think about? It may not be the best thing.
Do you have the grandkids living next to you?
No.
Oh. You want to know if we should, you and I should be able to commiserate today. Well, they don't have it so good. Does living next door, you know, is it, right, is it an opportunity or a challenge? I think everything, the truth of the matter is, everything in life is an opportunity and a challenge. But there certainly are challenges with living next door, especially with grandparents, sometimes being forced to be out of their role. You know, one of the things that's fascinating, it's beautiful about grandparents, is that, I'm talking about as far as the kids are concerned, is that it's really the only relationship in their life that's constant and you don't have to discipline them. It's really, it's especially in Adelie, you said you got teenage grandchildren, there's so much turmoil in a teenager's life and they their parents are just, that's life, unless you have an extraordinary exception to the rule, they have challenges at home raising the teenagers, right? So everybody, you know, parents, we have it in these parashiyot, God has different names, Hashem, Elohim, Shindal, Yod, right, Shadai, what, like, so, I always try to run the type of classroom where kids could ask any question they wanted to and feel comfortable doing so. So one kid raised his hand once and he said, "Hey, Rebbe, why does God need so many names? I only have one name." I was an 8th grade Rebbe for 15 years before I started my school. So he's just like, "What does God all need all these names for? What's wrong with one name?" So I said, "You know, it's a pretty good question. Give me a minute to think about it." So I told him, I said, "You know, how do your parents convey to you that you're in trouble? What do your parents do to let you know that you're in trouble?" So one of them says, "They call me by my middle name also." Yitzchak Yaakov Horowitz. Get up here. You know, that was always, we always did that at home. We actually had, the oldest three have second names. The third one, the fourth one didn't. Her name was Feige. So I added a name to her. I promise you. I said, "Look, I don't want to yell at you. I want to let you know that I'm annoyed. So it would be Feige Baruch. That's what I thought. Come on over here. I promise you we did that at home. I wanted to let her know. I said, "Sweetheart, I don't want to yell at you. It's not your fault that you don't have a second name. How do I convey to you that I'm picked off?" So I promise you, we used to add names. I added a name. Last one, Sarah, we also added a name for her. So I said, "Like, how do you know?" So one kid says, it was hysterical. You're listening to the kids, these 13-year-olds saying to a person, they call my middle name. "No, my mother spaces the words out when she's really annoyed. Come here now." You know, the last word, "ready," is like an exclamation mark in the word. It's really funny. The kids were all expressing. It's really a riot. So I said, "God is our parent. He's guiding us. And in the Torah, God also speaks sometimes with mercy and sometimes with firmness. Doesn't mean anger, but God wears different hats. But we can't see him. So how does, he doesn't get to space the words out or call us by our middle names. So how do you know when the din hat is on? So God gave us cues. When you say Elohim, that means that's a more firm. Hashem means is a God of mercy. And that's what Moshe was talking about. You showed me this name, you showed me that name, that was referring to. So I said that was, so parents wear very different hats. Grandparents don't have to. We don't have to do that. So it is so, again, for those of you who are grandparents and the kids are out of the house, I really encourage you to think about your role. Try not to slide over to the discipline thing when you see things you don't like. I see some heads nodding, okay? Don't let yourself put that other hat on. That's not your hat. Unless, chas v'shalom, things are chaotic or whatever it is, that, you know, there's an exception to the rule. You raise your kids. Don't try to raise the grandkids. That's my respectful opinion. It's not our role. We're supposed to be rachamim only. One of the things that I do with adolescents, when adolescents are in crisis, if they have a grandparent, I tell the parents, send them over to the grandmother's house. Send them over, let them make... Tell your mom, I'm sending Yitzi over, make his favorite cookies. It's so comforting, especially for a kid who's going through challenging times. So, let's talk about some of these things. And I'm going to speak to parents specifically about the issue of negotiating with your kids. One of the things, you know, when you think about relationships, let's think about it this way. I think the ultimate relationship is, when I spoke about it very briefly this morning, I spoke about it more in depth this morning, in our coffee clutch. How do you get your kids to seek your guidance when they need it most? Most kids don't come to their parents when they're in trouble, when they're, you know, about to get into trouble. And we talked about some of the barriers. Think of it this way. I'm giving a speech now. Okay, so a lecture is a certain level of instruction, let's say, okay? So you have a lecture. Then we have a Q&A session. Most people find question and answers to be more helpful than their lecture because you folks get to talk and you hear what your neighbor's saying. It's relevant to your life in a way maybe that I don't understand. Now, the third level would be if you ask the question, right? And the fourth level would be if you came and you went to the presenter, like myself or somebody else, say, listen, Rabbi Horowitz, there's something I'd like to talk to you about in private. Can we go over there? So that would be like the best level of guidance if you got to talk about what was on your mind in a private setting. So think about it. What guidance do our children get from us? They all get a lecture, right? That was great. That's for sure. We're all lecturing. Are our children getting level number four from us? Where their level four was, where can you sit down? I'd like to talk to you about something. And I think it's important to understand that if this is a goal as parents, that they're able to come and talk to us about whatever's on their mind, we have to think about removing the barriers. Okay? Think about it. Why would a child not speak to a parent? I'll do very briefly what we went through this morning. Talk to me. A teenager is getting into trouble. His friends are starting to drink, or he's starting to drink himself. He's 17 years old, and some of his friends are getting glory drunk. Some of them are just drinking on the weekends or going to a Shalom Zachar and, you know, filling up glasses there. And he wants to... Why would he not come over and say, hey, mom, dad, I think I'm getting a drinking problem. Why would they not do that? Go ahead. What would be the barriers? Why would a teenager not speak to their parents when they have a problem? Go ahead.
They feel that they'll immediately be judged.
They'll be judged, right. You're going to judge them. You're going to give them that look. From now on, you're not going to look at them the way you looked at them before. You're going to, my kid's having a problem. Okay, so they don't want to get judged. What else?
You're going to make it worse. You're going to call the parents, the kids, and...
Right, you're going to... Oh, you mean, they're talking about if they tell the grandparents.
No, they'll call the parents or the friends.
Oh, the parents or the friends. Oh, yeah, they're going to mix in. They're going to butt in, and they're going to destroy my life. Right? Okay, what else?
Disappointment.
They don't want to disappoint you, right? They don't want to upset you. What else? They don't want to get punished. Right? What did you say?
I said fear of punishment.
The fear of punishment. And perhaps the most important thing is they think we don't get it. Right? They think we don't get it. They think we don't understand their lives. So I propose to you that if you want to get your children to confide in you and to really seek your guidance, and as grandparents, by the way, we really could fill that role with adolescent children where they're trying to sort things out for themselves. If we position ourselves well, I believe that we could be of help to them where children might not be comfortable speaking to their parents about it. If you get it, it's a big if, if you get it as a grandparent, they might be comfortable talking to you as they do me a favor. Let's keep this privately. And you know, I found that kids are dying to get advice from adults. They really, really want it. Believe it or not, they really want to hear it. They just don't want a lecture. They don't want you butting in. They don't want to get punished, right? So think about the barriers. If this is what you're looking to do to position yourself, I think it's one of the nicest things that a child can say I was always able to talk to you about something, about anything. So the problem with these barriers is that you have to remove every single one of them. And the house, what it looks like then is when you tell your children, if something's going on in your life, I want to know about it. Even if it's going to upset me. Right? Even if it's going to, even I won't be disappointed. It's called living life. You know, our Torah didn't cover up the sins of our greatest leaders. I propose to you that if a Jewish book company was doing a translation of Bereishis, they'd leave out half of it. Okay? You know, they'd edit out half of that stuff. Yaakov was a tzaddik, he knew Shas when he was four. You know, but this is real life. I called Rav Shimon, most of the years that I taught as a Rebbe from 1982 till 1996. Most of those years I volunteered for the weakest track in the school. Whenever there was, I always volunteered for the weakest kids. Sometimes they had, mixed groups. Sometimes they divided them according to level. I always volunteered for the weakest track. And a lot of my kids, my weaker students, they were really fed up by the time they came to my class. They were sick and tired of learning and rabbis and, you know, all of that stuff. And so I wanted the boys to have FaceTime with Gedolim, with leaders of our community, with the Torah scholars. So whenever it happened to be that the two yeshivas that I taught in both had catering halls. So very often Rosh Yeshivas or rabbinic leaders would come to a simcha in the building, and I always got my, I used to, please can you give, I go over Rosh Yeshiva, can I bring my boys down for a bracha? And over the years, you know, many of them are in Gan Eden already. It was a long time ago. But it was a great experience for my kids. They got to see them, you know, they gave them brachas. Honestly, in all fairness, they spoke to them, my students. Most of them spoke over their heads. Because they, you know, they're not used to talking to 13-year-old homies. You know, they're used to talking to Rosh Yeshivas. You know, they're used to talking to 18-year-old Talmidim. That wasn't their wheelhouse. No complaints. Rav Shimon Schwab Zatzal, the head of the German Jewish Yekke community in Washington Heights. I'll never forget it as long as I live. I went over to him. He was. I had this chus of teaching three of his grandchildren, and I went to him. He was at a bris downstairs in yeshiva. I said, Rav Schwab, can I please ask Rav Schwab to speak to my talmid? He said, sure, no problem. I'd be glad to. So I walked him up the steps, and I said, I just want the Rav to know that, you know, don't tell my boys the tzitzis, you know, don't give them a lot of, like, don't give them these deep Torah thoughts. You know, my kids are, many of them are really struggling. He walked into my class just like this, exactly like this. He sat down. He said, how old are you? Boys are 13, 14. That was a really tough time in my life in yeshiva. I struggled. I found the language very difficult. I had a hard time with Hebrew, and then they loaded up Aramaic on top of it. And I really struggled. I promise you, you could have driven a Mack truck through the mouths of my students. Their jaws dropped, and they were staring at him. And he said, you know, and he gave them a way out. He said, you know, I went over to some of the older boys and I asked them if they please have some time to learn with me. And thankfully, I was able to get through it. He picks himself up. I walk him out of the room. It was total silence. I said, this is great, you know. I should bring him in more often. You'd have a quiet. And I said, talk to me, guys. Tell me. I just said, close your gemaras. I saw they were like, they were just, I was in tears. I really was. You see, I'm in tears now. It was almost 30 years ago. And It was so wise, and it was so what my kids need. Like, he spoke to them. He got it. And you wouldn't think, you know, a 75, 80-year-old Rav from Washington Heights is going to get it, you know? He got it. He got them. So I said, tell me, boys, what goes through your mind? Excuse me, you know, I had some really lively kids. He says, oh, please. One of my kids says, come on, Rebbe. He used the street term for being less than truthful. He says, oh, Rebbe, he's, you know what he said. You know, he says, hey, he's BS. He goes, it's really good. And I said, how many of you think the Rav Schwab was lying? Every hand went up. He said, oh, he makes a speech. You told him on the way up that he should be nice to us. He made up the story. Come on, Rebbe. We know how you do stuff, you know. So I said, okay, guys, watch this. I said, I'm going to open the door, and we're just going to wait in the hall. I'm going to wait in the hallway. The next three Rabbeim that walk in, I'm going to stop and ask them to come in here. So I said, three Rabbeim or parents, any adults. I waited out in the hallway. The Rebbe walked by, took a few minutes later. I said, come inside. When you hear of Shimon Schwab, what comes to your mind? He said, truthfulness, erlichkeit, honesty, integrity. And every person I brought in said the same thing. I said, come here. What would be the odds that Rav Schwab would lie? You know, the other said, ha! Never in a million years. So he walked out and said, hey guys. You know, must be true. So you know, it was amazing. Like, so when we talk about, you know, relationships and allowing our children to confide in us and seek our guidance and develop a real kesher, they're trying to figure stuff out. They really want to hear from us. They don't want a speech. They don't want you to be grounded because of what they said, and they don't want to disappoint us. I said, one of the boys I asked when adolescents come to me and we're talking about whatever stuff that they've troubled in them to. So I said, talk to your parents. Why you know, it's nice that you're talking to me. I'd be glad to talk to you, but you know, why don't you go home and talk to your parents? You should see the answers. Like, I'm going to punish me. What have all you guys said? And so one boy sticks in my head and says, Rebbe, my mother's the nicest lady in the world. She's really, really nice. She means well. She means well. You know, she's really nice. But every time she sees that I'm getting into trouble or I tell her something, she goes like this. And takes out a pillow. You know, she's a nice lady. Bother her and mention her and she'll be upset and she'll start crying. So I think it's something that we need to tell our children. I think we need to tell our kids that if there's something going on in your life, we want to know what's going on. And I think that the Torah wrote about the weaknesses of our sins of our greatest leaders. I know there are charitable interpretations of what they were and all of that, but the Torah didn't cover up on stuff to let us know that the path to success is not a straight line. I used to actually bring some business people in to speak to my students, people who are successful businessmen, and I would tell my students, you know, when I had weaker students or sometimes with my teenagers. I have a group, you know, 10 kids that are substance abusing, and you know, I bring in a very successful adult, and I say, tell me, how was the, you know, how are things? He says, oh, it was so hard the first few years. You know, the kids see a successful adult. They don't see that we all struggle with stuff. You know, so it's so refreshing for them to hear that we went through this. I called that Dr. Twersky. I always tell it to kids. Dr. Abraham Twersky, the prolific writer and psychiatrist, and he was one of my mentors when I started, was very gracious, he gave me a lot of time when I started dealing with teens at risk and with you know, child abuse and kids using drugs and all of that. I'm a yeshiva guy, like what did I know about this stuff? So he was very gracious to mentor me. So I once asked him, I said, you know, Rav Shi, there are a few books I'd like to write, I'd like to start writing, you know. What do I need to know? You wrote that at the time. It was, you know, he had written already 30, he wrote 80 books right now. He wrote 80, including works with he wrote psychiatric analysis. Anyone ever see that? Of the Peanuts comic strips. He wrote it together with Schultz, with the Machaber, with the writer of he's a prolific writer. So I told him, I said, Rav Shira, I want to start writing. What do I need to do? You ready? He says, Rav Yaka, you want to start writing? Get used to rejection. He says, get used to rejection. He says, my first manuscript was rejected by 37 authors. Kids don't see that. The kids look at him and see a finished adult. So if you want to be able to guide your children and have relationships with your grandchildren and be able to really guide them through life, it's okay if they see our struggles. It's fine. It's important. Two more things, then I'll open to some questions. So I think it's important to really understand adolescence, whether it's your children or it's your grandchildren. And most of us really suppressed our adolescent years or the challenges that we had then. So because I deal with teenagers all the time, my wife says I'm still a teenager. let's just talk about it just for a moment or two. And again, I'd like to answer those specific questions and really open it up. Adolescence is a transition. It's a healthy transition. We're kids. Transition from our home or their home into adulthood. It's very confusing to them. Transition is always messy. Transition is always stressful. Imagine you get invited to a weekend bar mitzvah in some nice hotel in Jersey or whatever. You go to a hotel, you go on vacation. Okay? You go on vacation, you're going to some place where there's no Zika virus, alright? So you're heading out. You like your home, you're really looking forward to vacation. In between, it's not that much fun. Right? You're going through security. Just imagine if somebody came and asked you for a favor while you were walking there with your shoes in your hand. You know, it's not a good time. Or when you pull up to a weekend bar mitzvah and there's 40 cars there and you're trying to get a bellhop. You know, you want to get unpacked. Adolescence is the ultimate transition. If you stop the teenager and you said, okay, where are you going to be? Where are you going to be when you grow up? And are you going to be successful? Will you marry? And are you going to have friends? And you know, the answer to every single question is, I don't know. So they're at the same time selfish and generous. You know, they'll volunteer for Chai Lifeline or do some the most amazing volunteer work and won't help you with the groceries. You know, it's just that it's confusion because they're confused. But they so desperately need our support and they need our guidance as they walk their way through it. There's a lot of obviously there's a ton of research on it. One of the first there was a woman named Margaret Mead who did some studies in the 20s on adolescent. I mean, she studied a lot of things, but one of the things. The theory was there was the old school or the original thought was that adolescence is basically like a hurricane. You know, it passes through. Just take the patio furniture and it'll be over. Just there's nothing to do. Just get under the table and just like Hurricane Sandy came through. Just you know, now that it was called Sturm und Drang, that is storm and stress in German. That was really people really felt this way, that adolescence is a Sturm und Drang. It's a storm, and it'll just pass. Just buckle up, and, you know, get high. And Margaret Mead said she went around looking at, she actually in American Samoa, she went to primitive cultures and said, let me see, does everybody have this adolescent stress? And lo and behold, she found that there was no adolescent stress, or almost none. And the reason was that they didn't have that adolescence period. That in-between period, where kids, when they were 13, they were working in the fields with their fathers, and the girls were helping their mothers do the laundry. Wasn't the Mr. Clean, or, you know, whatever. They didn't have the technology. It was a full day's work, just doing stuff. So they helped right away. So there was no adolescence because they became adults. And as soon as they were big enough and strong enough to work and responsible, they became adults. We have this extended period of adolescence where our children are in between, and we're not quite sure who the boss is. That's another reason that I think is very stressful. It's stressful because you're not quite sure who's in charge. You know, a six-year-old, everybody knows a six-year-old, the parents make the rules. You have a 22-year-old living at home, 22-year-old makes the rules. What's in between? So it's confusing. It's very interesting. When I started my yeshiva, things were very small. My wife and I did everything by myself. You know, my wife helped me out. Then we started to bring in department heads. We hired, yeshiva got bigger and much bigger, and it was much more than I could manage myself. So we got a Hebrew principal and an English principal and a business office, all right? Like all businesses or all schools go through this phase. So I was debating what to do with my wife now. You know, what to do I'm committed to the marriage. Just put it out there. You know, I say like, what do I do? My wife is running everything right now. What do I name her? How does she fit in now that all these people are here? So I really don't know what to do. So whenever I don't know what to do, I ask people in the business, you know, who do this for a living. So I had a few parents in my yeshiva that run big companies. I said, what would you recommend I do with what title should I give my wife? So they said, Rebbe, please take this with all respect. Let it go on with her life. It's going to be very confusing for your staff. Because if you call her office manager, or your assistant or something, people are not quite sure what that means. Does it mean she's me? So like if she goes over to a Hebrew principal and says, could you please, could you go around to the classes and do this? So if it's a secretary or an assistant or an office manager that's asking it, the principal outranks the office manager. So yeah, I'll get to, don't worry about it, I'll get to that. When I have a few minutes, I'll get right back to that, right? And walk away. If she's really my extension, why are you laughing, Rav? You're here, good, thank you. So think about it. So it's not clear what her role is, and it's never going to be clear because she's my wife. So if she's really me, I'm busy with something, so she's representing me. When she says something, she could say it politely, but she's the boss, and people have to listen to her. So it's not clear, it's never going to be clear what her role is. So we actually set it up that she volunteered for certain projects. She was very artistic, she was very talented, and she has a life. So she went back to her life and did some stuff in the yeshiva. But it was actually fantastic advice. It really bothered me. I didn't like hearing it. And, you know, it really ticked me off. What if she can't work here? You know? But it was really good advice. So, like, with teenagers, it's... That is the phase. That's the transitional phase. And I think, like Margaret Mead's research would indicate, by giving children more responsibility and more control over their lives and giving them some of their money to manage, and even though all of these things bring up a whole host of issues, you can compress the phase. I really believe you can do that. And make it easier for them to transition. One more thing on technology. It's probably the greatest source of stress with teenagers today, that teenagers and their parents, is the whole technology piece. You know, children, should they have it? Shouldn't they have it? You know, and that's a whole way beyond the scope of this talk. But it's just something to think about. I believe that it's important to talk about things. It's important to set ground rules. I think parents, you're not their friends. You know, you should be friendly, you should love them very much. But, you know, it's important that you set boundaries and you really give the children some direction. And the kids appreciate it, even though they'll never thank you for it, believe me. They'll never thank you and say, you know, I really appreciate that you tell me I have to be back at 10 o'clock. But, you know something? I'm telling you, trust me, I'm with teenagers all the time. They appreciate, they get it. they know that it's an expression of love. They bridle because they fight you because they're teenagers. That's what they have to do. That's the job. That's the job description. But they, in their hearts, they really appreciate it. I will never ever forget. I was talking to a teenage girl. The parents, you know, were sitting in the room. They asked the friends of mine, friends of ours, my wife and I. So, she was talking. Her parents were in the other room, so she was talking to me there. And she said, Rabbi Horowitz, I said, tell me what's going on. What's the source of? She says, Rabbi Horowitz, I'm the only one in my class that doesn't have a curfew. Does not. So I thought I heard wrong. I said, what? She says, I'm the only one in my class that doesn't have a curfew. So I said, Mazel Tov. What are you complaining about? So she said, all my friends, when it hits 10 o'clock or 10:30, they're all texting and asking their parents for more time, and you know, and she started crying. And she said, my parents don't care. She said, my parents, they say they trust me, but they just don't want to be bothered. She was the youngest one in the family by a lot. And she said, they say they trust me, they just don't want to be bothered. They're done. And she said, it hurts me watching my friends. Sometimes I make believe I'm texting them, so I shouldn't feel bad that no one's there. You know, it's like people, you land on a plane, you know, you have nobody to say hi, I'm alive, you know. This is the way she felt. She felt that it was something that, you know, that she didn't have. So parent your children, you know. I think with today's technology, it changes so fast. If your grandkids are out of the house, I give you every right to be totally clueless. You don't have to know what's going on. You don't have to know today's Snapchat or this or that. Just enjoy your life. If you got kids at home, you really need to know what's going on. And if your kids know more about technology than you do, which most kids do, it's kind of hard to supervise them, you think? You supervise them. There's a great cartoon. It says, like, a father is sitting at the table, and you see the kid standing behind them. He says, Dad, click on this, click on that, click on that. That's how you download the kiddie software. Click here, okay, that's it. You know? So, like, you really need to know what's going on. You really, really, really need to get it. You need to get it. You need to know what's going on. You need to know the programs. Please, I'm begging you, don't say what I said before. Don't go this texting, schmexting thing. You're just saying, I don't know what's going on in your life. Why doesn't nobody talks today? Everybody says, I'm telling you, the kids, that's how they communicate today. Deal with it. Deal with it. Thank God it's Shabbos. You know, but just deal with it. That's the way it is. Finish. If you roll your eyes, if you make these negative comments, I promise you, they say, okay. Every time you say that, you're saying, don't bother talking to me, don't bother coming to me with your problems, I have no idea what's going on in your life. So you have to, you know, I think that if you're feeling a little overwhelmed, I think you should, I call it making your own school. Go to people who know teenagers, or go to parents that you see do have a great relationship with the teenagers despite everything that's going on. In response to your question with the teenagers, I think they really value these grandparents. They just want to be loved. I think of my neighbor. That's how I think of it in terms of our grandchildren. And I went down to Baltimore before here. I went down on Thursday and taught my two granddaughters how to ski. And I just did it now. I made a neder on Rosh Hashanah that this year I'm going to teach all my grandkids to ski. I don't know. Make sure other Kabbalists, you think. But, you know, I it's just important. I know if I don't go and I don't make the time, it's not easy. If I don't make the time, it's just not going to happen. But even then, we have time that they're there. Shut it down and just be in the moment. It's very hard to do. It's really, it's easy to say, but it's hard to do. But I do believe that your children really want it. About favoritism, I would be a liar if I said that every parent loves all their children the same. You know, some kids are blessed with a personality that's just very easy to love, and some kids are just ornery. That's the way it is. That's the way Hashem made them. And you can't, I'm just saying, so to say you should all love your grandchildren equally, and you know, it's not realistic. But they shouldn't know it. They can't know it. You know, especially if you have a grandchild who's struggling. I get a lot of calls from parents that call me and they say, listen, Rabbi Horowitz, you know, we went to your classes, we're having a very hard time with that teenager, we're doing everything he asked us to do. You know, stay in the game and don't judge them and give them space and love them unconditionally and discipline them when they need to be, and we're really trying. But every time I go to my in-laws, my father-in-law says nasty things to my son. What should I do? He can't take it because, first of all, he's older. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't have kids anymore. But he's not doing very well. What do I do? So I say, ask them once, ask them twice to knock it off, and don't go afterwards. I promise you, that's what I'm telling your kids. I'm not your kids. That's what I tell parents. I said, tell your father, say, Dad, my son has asthma, and you're smoking. That's what I tell him to say. My son has asthma, and you're smoking. My son cannot take this criticism. He gets criticism in school. He's having a hard time with his friends. And he needs you to love him. And if you can't do it, see you later, man. I'll see you when they're out of the house. That's what I tell them to do, because their responsibility is to their children. So they need you to love them. It's not complicated. It's as easy, it's as complicated and as simple as that. And the ones who are difficult, there's a great bumper sticker, like a poster. I had it in my office for a long time. It says, the time I need you love the most is when I'm most difficult to be loved. You know, that it's really true. It's really true. The kids who are adorable and have chen and, you know, just like that, they, you know, it's easier to love them. But the other ones, the ones who are challenging, they really need your love and attention. I'll take some questions. Go ahead. I said, spoke about a whole bunch of different things. Whatever's on your mind, folks. Go ahead. Ask away. Yes?
This isn't a question, it's more of a statement.
Please. Editorials are permitted. Go ahead.
Always encourage my kids to talk to their grandparents, my parents. And they had no one to talk about anything. And they do. And they always did it.
You encourage them to talk to their grandparents. Yeah. That's great.
It's great. And in fact, they think that my parents are cooler than
that's good. You heard what she said? You think the parents are cooler than them. And you know something? Great.
It's fine. No, I'm not.
That's great. Right? Yeah. Why are you twitching then when you said it? No, just kidding. No, but it's really good. If you're fortunate to have grandparents who get it, it's such a resource. It is such a resource. I keep seeing this again and again. The wildest kids calm down, you know, when they get that.
So even like in the future, people here are thinking, you know, they still have little kids.
Right.
There's still a point where they might turn to them.
Right, correct. That's why you invest.
You have to push it.
And I want to tell you something. Something I notice over time is that some people are fantastic little kid parents and fantastic little kid grandparents, and they're clueless when it comes to teenagers or adult children. I shouldn't say clueless, Chas v'Shalom. It's hard for them. They're not good at it. They can't communicate. They're great. They sit on the floor reading books, playing. Well, what did you say? They're getting older. One of you said that, right? That I'm great with reading the stories. Now they're adults. It's a different ballgame. And some people are actually and some people are just fantastic adult parents, and they never had patience for that little kid stuff. So if that's built to your strength, you know, if you know that you're really cerebral and you're good and you're able to guide your adult kids, well, then spend the time, invest the time to have meaningful conversations with them and make the venues to be there. I want to just follow on what I said before about the kids needing love the most. The last 5 years, my wife and I have been volunteering for a beautiful organization called Madregos. They support kids and adults on Jewish people who are in 12-step recovery programs for drug addiction, alcohol addiction, you know, gambling, sex, whatever it is. And there were 230 kids this past Rosh Hashanah, 230 addicts, most of them children, you know, under the age of 25, and some people my age. There was one guy there who was celebrating 33 years of sobriety. He goes to a meeting every single day on Shabbos. He travels if he needs to, because he knows that he's hanging on by a finger now, 33 years later. Anyway, so it's really a beautiful program. They give the kids space. They participate as much and as little as they want in the liturgy and the davening. But there were other people there. You never know who's a chief and who's an Indian there. Right? You don't know who's on recovery because they don't hang up a sign. So they have some people from the board there, and they're people from the community, and they're volunteers like myself, and there are addicts. You never know who's who. God forbid you never ask. So there was one guy there, may God forgive me. He looked like he didn't get it. Like his collar was like caught up to here. You know, he was very stiff and very, and I said, this guy doesn't look like he's in recovery. He looks like he can't even take a drink. You know, and he's certainly not a mentor. He's not a board member. But what's he doing here? I never said a word, of course. I didn't even say to my wife, we never talk about individuals. But I just looked at him all yantar, all Rosh Hashanah, and said, the heck is this guy doing here? And very proper. It's hard for me to describe. Like, he didn't look like he's hanging with the kids. Anyway, right after Mincha, the last eat before Rosh Hashanah, the equivalent of Shalosh Shudas on Rosh Hashanah, they have a meal, and the kids get up and talk. It's beyond description. Just no words. The kids talk about their experiences, and you know, they learn to support each other. You know, nobody's more vulnerable than an addict, and they learn to support each other. I learned a lot from I told the kids. This year, I told the kids, I learned a lot from you. What happened was, it's really funny. I was sitting at my seat on Rosh Hashanah. I started crying during one part of the davening. I got very emotional. But I listened to a lot of stuff all year. And it just wells up, and So I totally lost it. I was crying. with my talus on. I put my talus over my head. I put my head. I was sobbing. So two kids came over to me. Says two 18-year-old kids. Came and just patted me on the back to give me support. Imagine you see like a 55-year-old guy, he's 57, I'm sitting in shul, and this guy comes over and says, patted me on the back, and a third kid comes over to me, and he says, Rabbi, I'm here for you. I promise you. He says, Rabbi, I'm here for you, you can talk, I'll be here all yantar if you want to talk to me again. It was so funny, and that's the culture. They've learned to support each other. That's what we need to do with the kids. I'm here for you. You don't need a speech. You don't need to give them a lecture. Just, you have a grandchild who's going through a tough time. No speeches. They don't need a speech from you. They don't need anything. You don't have to solve their problems. You just need to be there. These kids learn. I learned so much from them. I told the kids. Anyway, so one of the kids got up. He said, look, he's been sober for 5 days. He said he only died twice of an overdose. He said, he almost died of an overdose twice already. And they're trying to work on sobriety. I'm sorry, I'm trying not to lose it. And he said, it's hard for me to speak in public, but I want to thank my mom and my dad. And this Mr. Thai was his father. And I swear to you, in a million years, I wouldn't have dreamed it. He came up and embraced him, and the parents sat down. And this kid turned to 500 people, and he said, everybody asked me how I could do this to my parents. He was molested when he was 15. He was a great kid, he was doing great in school, he was molested very badly. And his life fell apart. He started using drugs and whatever. So he said, everybody's asking me how I could do this to my parents, that I'm causing them pain. He said, I tell him, what are you, crazy? He started using some language. He said, my own life was blanked up. He said, how could I help them? I can't help myself. He said, he was so articulate. He really articulated what was going on in his head. He said, I should help them? I should worry about their pain? I can't figure it out myself. But they didn't give up on me. So, that's my closing comment to you. Don't give up on your kids. Don't give up on your grandkids. They need support. They need your love. And they need you to just pat them on the back and say, I'm here for you. It's It's the nicest thing you can do for them. So you should, I give you a bracha from the bottom of my heart. You should all have nachas from your children, from your grandchildren. Prioritize, really try to make the time to spend with them. You know something, the other stuff will go and come. You just be committed to think of my neighbor, Frankenthal, Mr. Frankenthal, the cheese guy. That's what I always think about when, again, I started doing what my kids moved to L.A. Our son moved to L.A. 4 years ago. I shouldn't say that. He took my two grandchildren to L.A. Who cares about him, you know, right? So he took my two grandkids away. And I promised myself when he moved that I'm never going to let 3 months go by without seeing the kids. And I get on a plane at 6 in the morning. I get on a plane out of Newark. I'm there by 9:30. I hang out with the kids all day. I take them literally all day. I don't talk to anybody. I don't turn off my phone. And I take the red eye back at night. I have dinner with my kids, with the kids, and I take the red eye back. I do this every 3 months. I'm not waiting for a parade. You know, no one honors you at a dinner for reading stories, bedtime stories to your kids. But, you know, it was just a commitment that I made because I just wanted to do it. So I'm saying, I'm just encouraging you all to, I don't say you have to do that, but just figure it out. Figure it out to really spend quality time with the kids. And if the quantity isn't there, when they're there, just shut it down and give them your attention. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, everybody.